In 1981, one child in 10,000 was autistic. Today, one child in 50 is autistic. Many say vaccines are the cause of autism spectrum disorder. Many others disagree. And so today we ask, do vaccines cause autism?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What radio.
Folks, like an avalanche roaring down the mountain, the number of children suffering from autism spectrum disorder is building up a horrific momentum. And we, today, 1981, just a couple decades ago, there were one child in 10,000 was autistic. Today, one child in 50 is autistic. If something is not done to stop this avalanche of autism, it will soon bury us. We'll all be autistic, I guess. It would seem the logical place to start regaining control is by identifying what is causing the rate of increase in autism. And many believe vaccines are the cause of autism and its rate of increase. Many others disagree. And so today we're going to pick up the question, do vaccines cause autism? What do you think, Jason?
You know, there's been quite a bit of controversy about this, and I have to say, reviewing the evidence on my end, I think there's something there.
Hello?
You do.
I do.
Hang on there, Kent. We'll pick you up in just a minute. Folks, this is the 1082nd edition of the Food Chain Radio Show right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Luganville who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. And today we are talking vaccines. Do you think vaccines cause autism? Well, here to help us guide the conversation today, we have Kent Heckenlively, who is the author of Inoculated, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism. Kent, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks, Todd, for having me.
Pleasure to have you aboard. So, you get to know you a little bit. You're a school teacher, correct?
Yeah, I'm a science teacher, and I've been a science teacher for about 10 years, and for 15 years before that, I was an attorney. I always jokingly say, my dad was an attorney, my mom was a teacher, and now I've been both my parents' professions. But I really think I'm an educator, so I think that's my true personality. So I love being a science teacher.
Well, good to go, and we love science. So that's an interesting blend, though, a teacher and an attorney all in one package.
Yeah, well, you know, I think I was always one of those kids who liked to talk in class and share ideas and debate things, so that naturally leads you either to law or education, and I think education is what is more my style, so I'm a teacher.
Well, good to go, and you're also an author.
Yeah, so I've published a couple books. I wrote a book called Plague with Dr. Judy Mikovits, who's a 20-year government scientist, looking at chronic fatigue syndrome and autism, and that had kind of led me to this next book, Inoculated.
Mm-hmm. You're also a parent.
I'm a parent of an autistic child and a parent of a normally developing child.
And so you have one of each, so you have a pretty good eye as to what autism really can look like. But why did you pursue this course of action with your writing, looking into autism? Were you curious, or were you trying to prove a point, I guess I'm trying to say?
Well, you know, I have to go back about 15 years, because what happened to me is that our first child, a daughter, Jacqueline, it seems like her six-month series of vaccinations precipitated a seizure disorder and later autism. And, you know, I had heard this theory that there was a connection between vaccines and neurological diseases, but I really didn't believe it. And then along came my son, Ben, and what happened is, for reasons unrelated to autism, we kept him on a hypoallergenic milk formula after he went off of breast milk. And I actually took Ben to his 18-month checkup, and we had recently gone off of the hypoallergenic milk formula because it's real expensive. And I thought the pediatrician missed something at my daughter's six-month checkup. So at my son's 18-month checkup, He went through a full developmental workup. He had 15, 20 words. He was looking at people appropriately. Everything was fine. He gets his shots, and 3 days later, he's mute and pounding his head on the floor. And suddenly I said, wait a minute, we just had the test. He's fine. And I thought, oh, my God, it is the vaccines. And then luckily, I came across the gluten casein-free diet, the wheat and milk-free diet, because many parents were reporting that this was bringing their children back from autism, and both my kids went on it immediately, and after 12 days, my son said his first word again. And it was like we had interrupted some process that was would have been led to autism for him. It took him about a year to catch up in language with his peers, about 2 years for his sensory problems to go away. But he entered kindergarten as a normally developing kid, and he's 16 years old. Driving, he's a great student, he's an athlete on the track team, and you know, my daughter, unfortunately, that didn't work for her. So from that time, I just said, you know, nobody's going to tell me I didn't see what I saw, and I'm going to pursue this story till it's solved.
So you actually personally made the correlation between the vaccines and the behavior then?
Yeah, and, you know, somebody could say that it was a coincidence that my son was totally fine at his 18-month checkup, and then 3 days later he's mute. But then to see him come back, that's not a genetic problem. That's some injury that he got healed from.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we hear so much about autism and have heard so much in recent years, and there seems like the rate of autism is like an avalanche. It's just, you know, building as it roars down the mountain at us. 1981, 1 in 15,000 or something like that. And, 1 in 10,000. And today, 1 in 50. So as somebody who's really standing there looking at this in real time in your own flesh and blood, what exactly is autism?
Well, you know, It's the inability to make social connections. I think it's a failure of development, of getting yourselves to coordinate and do things to be able to get you to talk and to reason and do all these things. I mean, it's so interesting because from a genetic standpoint, I mean, my son is on the track team. He's probably going to be running the 1 in 200 meters because he's really fast. And my daughter has difficulty walking, okay? So you can't get, you know, a greater discrepancy between two kids. Mm-hmm. So something has gone haywire in her body, and it seems to me that it was something in the vaccines that caused it to go haywire. Now, what exactly that is and how it's happening has been part of a 15-year quest for me. So I started with writing...
Before you start... Let me go back a little bit. There seems to be what they call a autism spectrum disorder now, so which is to say some suffer more severely than others. Is that true?
Absolutely. So it can range from things like subtle social disorders, so problems in social communication, not picking up cues, to very profound things. About a quarter of the kids with autism have some kind of seizure problem. So it really seems to be something's gone wrong in the neurological system.
And to some greater extent than to others.
Absolutely, yes.
And is there a way of measuring this? I mean, has science developed a way of looking at a personality and actually judging where they are on this spectrum?
As of right now, there's no biological way to test that. It's usually done by observation and interpretation.
So when we look at autism, we're really scratching our head in confusion, aren't we?
Well, here's the thing that really kind of gets me in it. It's the genesis of my writing inoculated. So in 1998, a British researcher, Andy Wakefield, got reports that parents were saying that in addition to their children developing autism after an MMR vaccine, that they also had severe gastrointestinal problems. And so the CDC came up with a research plan.
Okay, I'd like you to hold that because we have to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll pick up that Wakefield study. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today we've got Kent Heckenlively with us, who is the author of Inoculated, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism. And we're taking a look at the subject of autism because it is a very big subject. In 1981, 1 in 10,000 was autistic. Today, 1 in 50 is autistic. What is going on? What is autism? And why is the rate of autism increasing so dramatically as we go through time? It seems like we must do something to get in control of this, or pretty soon that avalanche of autism will subsume us all, and we certainly don't want that. This is the Food Chain. Right back. Do stay tuned.
Wow, MetroFarm.com says we can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land. We can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5-, 6-, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
Welcome back out there. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today, we're talking vaccines and autism. What is autism? And why is the rate of autism increasing at such an incredible rate? 1981, 1 in 10,000 were diagnosed with autism. Today, 1 in 50. The rate has doubled since the turn of the century, which is only 16 years ago. Something is happening. What is it? Well, let's ask Kent Heckenlively, who wanted to ask the same question because one of his children is autistic, and so he went looking. So the Wakefield study, what did we learn?
Yeah, so what was interesting was Andy Wakefield got these reports from parents that after the MMR vaccine, their children not only developed autism, but they developed what appeared to be severe gastrointestinal problems. So he went investigating this, and he found that there was the measles virus was persisting in the gut of these children, and they actually had a novel bowel disorder, an inflammation in their bowels. And so sometimes when they were treated, the kids would recover. And this provoked a firestorm, and unjustifiably so, because all he said, and this was a case report of about 12 kids, he said this demands further investigation, and what we should consider doing is just vaccinate individually, one with measles, wait a little while, then mumps, then rubella. And he was viciously attacked. But then what happened, which was really interesting and forms the basis of this story, is that the CDC went to investigate these claims, and they had a perfect opportunity to investigate these claims, because what was happening is the MMR vaccine used to be administered after 3 years old at 36 months, okay? So there was this change in the United States where they were giving it much earlier, so they were giving it anywhere from 18 to 36 months. So this is just great. Hey, we're giving the MMR vaccine earlier than 3 years. Let's see if there's a change in autism rates among those who got it earlier rather than later.
Now, well, just a sec, MMR being measles, mumps, and rubella, correct?
Correct.
So instead of inoculating children one shot at a time, we're lumping them all together and get a 3-for-1.
Absolutely, yeah. So multiple viruses at the same time, which is unnatural in nature. If you think about how we build up natural immunity, we're not exposed to multiple viruses at the same time. So, but this is a great opportunity to actually look at some data. So the CDC came up with actually a great research plan because they had a group of children who'd been vaccinated at 3 years old or beyond, and they were having this new group coming in who were vaccinated earlier. Well, lo and behold, there was a dramatic difference in the rates of autism, specifically among two different groups. One, African-American males, it was about 360% increase in autism rates.
Ooh, 360%?
Yeah. And
so you have a built-in control group here, too, so that's kind of like real numbers you're talking about.
Yeah. And they also found a significant increase in another group they called isolated autism, which simply in the rest of the sane world means normally developing children. They had no other problems. It was only autism that they had. So what happened was when they got these numbers, they changed the research plan. They threw out about a third of the African-American males with autism, and by doing this, they took the numbers from a 3.6-fold increase down to about a 1.7, 1.8 increase, which is just below the threshold at which they can say, hey, there seems to be an effect here. Because generally anything over 2.0 is considered definitive proof of an effect. And so they also got together, a group of about five scientists at the CDC, and on a Saturday, to specifically throw away all of the data, the electronic files as well, the computer files. And this one researcher, Dr. William Thompson, thought that that was illegal, and he kept copies of all the documents. Fast forward to about 2013, where he contacts another autism researcher and scientist and parent with whom he'd communicated earlier, and their series of conversations leads Thompson to disclose to this other autism researcher, Dr. Brian Hooker, the fact that the CDC had covered up these numbers. The thing that's really evil about this thing, and I have no other way of describing it except as evil, is they used the results from this fake study on the MMR to convince the government to spend no federal dollars on researching vaccines and neurological diseases. So what happened in 2003, 2004, when this came out, is the federal government turned around and said, okay, look, we've disproven this, and now we will spend no money researching this question. Well, it's really tough to come up with answers if you don't invest any money in researching the question.
Well, now, let's back up a little bit. Did the CDC give any reasons why it scrubbed the data? I mean, did they use a cloth?
Yeah. You kind of wonder, and it's been interesting because since the revelations of the CDC whistleblower, Dr. William Thompson, he has turned over more than 10,000 documents to Congress. He has applied for and been granted federal whistleblower protection. He is waiting to be subpoenaed, and this has been going on for the better part of 2 years, which is what made me write the book, because we have actually met with Congressman Jason Chaffetz, who chairs the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, who claims that they are investigating it. They plan to call him, and, you know, promises from politicians are one thing, but I kind of figured I want to get the story out here now, because so hopefully 4 to 6 months from now, we'll actually have this guy in front of Congress answering questions.
Well, this just in, the Tom Price, who's just been nominated by the incoming president as Secretary of Health and Human Services, is a member of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, which supports informed consent to medical risk-taking and opposes mandatory vaccination, and is, in fact, calling for a moratorium on all government-mandated vaccines. So perhaps maybe there will be some scientific research looking into this. But the CDC still maintains that there is no problem here. I mean, And they say, and I quote from the CDC, vaccines do not cause autism website, there is no link between vaccines and autism. Vaccine ingredients do not cause autism. So you have, in a situation, a very steadfast presentation from the federal government that there is no problem. And yet, there seems to be so many of you who are standing up to the federal government and saying there's something going on here that we should look at. Why don't you trust the government?
Well, it's really interesting. I fall back on my training as an attorney, which, you know, our system of justice is based on a system of checks and balances. So why do I not trust a bank who says, oh, we're financially sound unless I get an independent auditor? Why do we not let murder suspects investigate their own crimes? Because we have this concern that we're not going to get the truth. So when the CDC is the very government agency which is promoting the use of vaccines, and we turn around and say, okay, you're going to investigate the safety of vaccines, that's an inherent conflict of interest. It's kind of like saying, if United has a plane crash, are we going to trust United to do their own investigation of that plane crash?
But I don't understand. We're going to have to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to know why the CDC is advocating for anything. Why is the CDC the one who is selling vaccines? I mean, shouldn't they be a non-partial arbiter between industry and consumers? I mean, so we'll pick that up. Hey, folks, you want to join in? 831-479-1080. Do you think vaccines cause autism? So the question on the table right now is, do vaccines cause autism? Well, the CDC says absolutely not. And then furthermore, there's nothing in the vaccines that would cause autism, including thimerosal. So get over it, forget it. And furthermore, most people responding to the email press release for this show kind of went along with Melinda McBride up in Washington, who says, I hope you are not perpetuating the myth that childhood vaccines are related to autism. Here in Washington State, we are now experiencing a mumps outbreak. We've had more cases of whooping cough, too. Young parents today did not grow up with these childhood diseases and don't recognize how dangerous they are for kids. We even had a young woman die here because she was not vaccinated. And she, of course, sends me to the CDC website. As did a lot of people, including the young public health doctor with whom we shared a dinner table last evening, who said it's so sad to see children get sick and die from something that could be prevented with a simple vaccine. And yet, here you are, Kent. You're going up against all of this stuff. And I just have to ask, why the CDC is not conducting scientific studies, objective scientific studies, into the what appears to be a major phenomenon between vaccines and autism? Why no studies?
Think about it. 1 in 50 kids has autism. You know, when does this become a crisis for people? You know, any death is a problem. Any illness is a problem that demands our attention. But the more than 1 million kids with autism are being ignored by our federal government, by our research. And not only are we being ignored, we're actively being attacked. You know, it's so funny to me, because if I was on the phone with you and I said, hey, look, I gave my kid, you know, Robitussin because she had a cough and she had a bad reaction, everybody would say, oh, my God, let's look at Robitussin. You know, there would be, if I was, you know, saying this product, Robitussin, is harmful, you know, I wouldn't be attacked as anti-science. But if I say, I think there's a problem with vaccines in some people and we need to properly study it, I'm suddenly attacked as being anti-science. One of the things that I argue in my book is that we need to treat vaccines like any other pharmaceutical product. So currently vaccines are a public health measure, which means you don't have long-term safety testing of them. So let's say you have a pharmaceutical drug that's out there. They have a control group of people who don't get the drug, and then they have a control group of people who do over a long period of time, and they track them for several years. We do nothing like this with vaccines. I mean, so I really want to turn the argument around, and I want to say, well, if you are so convinced, CDC, that vaccines are safe, why haven't you done the long-term safety testing? There is, you know, a group of anywhere from 1 to 3% of the population that doesn't vaccinate their kids for various philosophical or religious reasons. Why don't you look at those kids? That you don't have to do anything other than study the current population, and they refuse to do so. So, you know, they're really bringing this upon themselves. I always say there may be a place for vaccines, just like there's a place for antibiotics. But, you know, 15 years ago, anytime you had a sniffle, they were given antibiotics. And they said, hey, wait a minute, I think we're destroying the flora of the body. Maybe we should just hold those things, antibiotics, for something really serious. Well, you know, science is always evolving, but when the CDC comes out and says, we won't study this, we won't spend any dollars looking at this, and they're actively hostile to it. You know, John F. Kennedy said, those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Now, I'm not suggesting anything violent. I'm just saying, you know, they are setting up this dynamic where people like me have to write books and get angry and say, you guys aren't doing your job and you're harming children because they're not taking responsibility for, you know, doing proper science and answering these questions.
Well, let's go to the phones, 831-479-1080, and then let's ask Terry why he thinks the CDC is not coming up with some science on this. Are you there, Terry?
Yeah, it's Colonel Terry, Michael.
Okay, go ahead.
And I spent years in Washington. I also have involvement with regulatory activities, including the FDA. And the reason is, and I was a Nader's Raider with Ralph Nader and my youthful idealism in the 70s. I'm not that young, nor quite that idealistic, but I, like your guest, care that the good guys and girls win. I care about justice. And what is the name of your guest?
His name is Kent. What's your name?
Kent Heckenlively.
You forget that? Heckenlively.
Heckenlively. Good Dutch name, it sounds like.
German, actually.
All right, jawohl. Dear Goose. All right, well, Ken, I'm Terry.
Well, Terry,
I've had the wisdom, the opportunities that I've had, including working at the White House staff and with the Congress and at regulatory agencies, or dealing with them. The number one problem is we have so much blessed damn corruption in Washington, D.C., and in our federal government, including CDC in Atlanta, at all levels.
But for what purpose is the corruption?
Well, because we have people of goodwill like Ken and Dr. Wakefield and myself and you, Michael, you know, who care about things being just and we want it to be a better world and we want fairness. And we have people of bad will who are driven by greed. In some cases, they're greed to be top executives and CEOs of drug and pharmaceutical companies. And they will backstab others they're in competition with to advance in the corporate ladder. And they also don't care ethically if they have to lie, cheat, and steal and damage the public interest. So they show they made more money for their company than other vice presidents.
So you think that their CDC is not forthcoming with science, or is just accepting the science it's been handed because they're greedy and corrupt?
Well, in fact, Ken probably knows the name of the woman who was a director, senior executive at CDC for looking at, I believe, the MMR vaccine impacts and autism connections.
Yes,
that woman.
Let me just tell a quick story.
Thank you, Terry.
This goes right to Terry's point. So when this was happening and when the data came out that there was an increase in rates of autism among African-American males and those children who didn't have any other health condition, the researcher, Dr. William Thompson, actually wrote a letter to the head of the CDC, which is violating the chain of command, technically, in which he said, "This is troubling information. I'm supposed to present on this at an Institute of Medicine meeting, and I'm troubled by this because this needs to be discussed." And what happened is she shut him down. Instead of the director of the CDC, Dr. Julie Gerberding, you know, inviting the scientist to her office to discuss the troubling results, William Thompson was sanctioned.
There you go. We've got to take a quick break, folks. 4-831-479-1080. Right back with Kent, Heck, and Lively, and you. Well, folks, I don't know about you, but I think I've had every vaccine in the world times 10, having been in the Navy and having been traveling around the world into some pretty strange places like the headwaters of the Amazon and Cairo and whatnot. I've just had a tremendous amount, a number of vaccinations for this and that and everything. And so I wonder, you know, when I hear all of these problems, I look at myself in the mirror and think, well, am I autistic or am I crazy or something? And maybe, but don't think so. So I wonder about all of these claims that there is something wrong with vaccines and the extent to which, you know, civilization has come to rely on them to protect itself from all kinds of really bad things like measles, mumps, rubella, smallpox, and everything. So I don't know. How can I? What do you think, Kent? Is there something wrong with vaccines? Are vaccines causing autism?
Well, here's what I'd say to you, and this is something that we talk about a lot, which is that the vaccine schedule has dramatically changed. So it used to be that, you know, when I was growing up, you know, we would get maybe 10 vaccines before the age of 5, with the majority of those coming shortly before we entered kindergarten. Well, the schedule has changed dramatically. So now instead of 10, with the majority coming just before we go to kindergarten, we're at 49 doses of 14 vaccines. And about 20 of those doses come in the first year of life.
20? Yeah. 20?
20 doses, yeah. So what we find is that it seems that the immune system, you can go to any biology book and say, okay, when is the immune system really functioning properly? Well, it seems to be functioning properly after 3 years. So why are we giving any vaccines before a child is 3 years old? I have no idea. So I actually kind of think that if we really looked at it, what we'd kind of find is that we'd find that maybe for some things that are very serious, like smallpox and polio and these sorts of things, maybe there's a place for them for people whose immune systems are up and developing. And so you getting all those vaccines while you're young and healthy and traveling around the world, okay, that's fine. You can probably handle that. I also would start to worry as people age, because their immune system doesn't work as well as it did when they were younger, that, you know, one of the concerns is we're seeing record rates of Alzheimer's and dementias and everything. And, well, you know, all the seniors are being terrified with, you know, grandma goes to see her little grandchild and suddenly she turns into the big bad wolf, so she needs to get her whooping cough vaccine. Well, maybe grandma's immune system isn't working very well, so you give her a whooping cough vaccine and, you know, it causes her immune system to go haywire, and then she gets a neurological disease or dementia. So I think that it needs to be studied. And so, you know, if you ask me, if Ebola comes to America and it's killing people and they have an Ebola vaccine, okay, I'm probably going to take the Ebola vaccine. But when you have something like measles, which is a mild childhood disease which confers lifetime immunity, you know, you can go back and look at things from the 50s and 60s, and doctors talked about it as something that was normal and natural. You know, there is a potential risk, about 1 in 10,000, that it might lead to complications. But I find that we have made things that should not be terrifying, like measles, terrifying. And we've made things like autism, which truly are terrifying, that children are dying every day. They're wandering away from their caretakers, drowning in lakes and rivers, or dying of exposure, having seizures and dying. These are the truly terrifying things. So I think we've made the wrong things terrifying, and we've made some truly terrifying things. Oh, just, you know, we're just neurodiverse. If you have seizures, oh, that's just your neurodiversity.
Steve, what do you think?
I was curious if it could be fillers or extenders or even coloring.
Yeah, what about all the stuff? Yeah, what about all the
behavioral differences?
Great question, Steve. What about all the stuff in vaccines? CDC says they're okay.
It's a great question. What I would say to the CDC is, show me the safety studies. Show me the safety studies on these components individually, and show them to me together. And the response we get is, when we ask them to show that these things are not acting in concert, they call us anti-science.
Anti-science. It's always anti-science. Well, okay, so when we're going to take a final break. When we come back, I have a question for you from a listener who emails in, what can I do for my daughter, who is 12 years old and suffering from autism, and her self-consciousness is just dangerous. What can she do? This is Food Chain. Michael Olson, right back. Well, folks, the CDC says, and I quote, there is no link between vaccines and autism. Vaccine ingredients do not cause autism. Kent, what do you say?
You know, it's like somebody saying, it's like Richard Nixon saying, I'm not a crook. You know, give me some independent investigations before those claims are made, but don't have the very organization which is promoting vaccines be the same one who's saying that they're safe. Have an independent agency take a look at it.
Bob, what do you say?
Yes, I have doctors in my family, and I don't want to say my name because I don't know who this is, but they agree on both sides, and I've gotten in heated arguments with them. And bottom line is this: they do not tell the patients that they can ask for single individual vaccines rather than stacked. They also don't tell the patient that you can ask for vaccines that are not made with the adjuvants, the squalene, and the mercury. But you have to be knowledgeable enough to request that. So otherwise, you're gonna get the whole package.
Wow. 20 vaccine doses before the age of one. Incredible.
And a lot of it's unnecessary, they tell me. They tell me a lot of it's unnecessary. Your natural immune system should be sufficient with certain vaccines, and that's it. All this other triple stacking and all that other stuff, they tell me that's, you know, that's their party line with their pharmaceutical companies. They give it to them for free, and they get sponsored. It's like having a sports team with a bunch of stickers of the different sponsors all over your jacket. That's what the doctors are all about.
Thank you. I got an argument.
Okay, I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much for that call. Wow. So, Kent, what do you do for your daughter? We have a caller who wanted to know, what can I do for my daughter? He's so worried about her self-respect. You know, a 12-year-old girl growing up in the normal world and being autistic and having trouble.
Well, there is a group of autism doctors called Defeat Autism Now. They're called DAN doctors. There's a number of dietary interventions, vitamins, minerals. I don't think any of those is the answer. They have recovered some children. I mean, you know, putting my kid on the gluten casein free diet, my son recovered him quickly, but his problems were just beginning. What I end the book with is talking about some scientists. Like, there's a scientist at UC San Diego who I think may have the key to this problem, which is it basically the cells stop communicating. There's something called the cell danger response. So when a cell perceives a danger, whether it be chemical, biological, or viral, they may just stop communicating with each other. And what he says is when cells stop communicating, children stop talking. So he has come up with a test which identifies when the cells are not communicating. He's looked at some medicines which actually, in three different animal models, have started that again, communicating.
Wow.
So, and in animals who have the human age equivalent of 30 years, he's just also been finished up his first human trial, and although it's not published yet, the rumors I hear is the results are remarkable.
What is his name?
Robert Navio.
Robert Navio.
At UC San Diego.
And there's something to check in. Well, Kent Heckenlively, thank you so much for joining us today with Inoculated, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism. Do you think you can talk CDC into giving us some science?
You know, I'm hopeful that with the new administration...
we'll see what happens, huh?
There's going to be a change because actually Trump met with our group and promised to investigate the whistleblower claim.
There you go, folks. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.